Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the someplace they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, it's Alabama and A&M. It's this season's game of the century. Let's step it through. Alabama offense, Alabama defense, a little bit of special teams, a little bit of predictions. You ready?
Man, I am ready, man. I am ready for this game to get over with. I am tired of the hype.
Yes, yes. This has definitely been the hype machine, the Johnny football, the Johnny halftime, the Johnny autograph. You know, I knew early last season when the media kind of latched onto the Johnny football that I would grow to dislike that nickname. I never could have imagined that it would sort of swell to the amount of dislike that I have for it at this stage. But here we are. And it's our opportunity to maybe exorcise some demons from last season and the loss we suffered at the hands of these Aggies last fall. So why don't you step us through an offense? What do you expect when Alabama has the ball?
Well, you know, when we played Virginia Tech, there's been a lot of discussion about the offensive line and what we didn't do right. Well, looking back at that game, we just really didn't have the opportunity to get into sync. Because starting the game, big kickoff return for a touchdown. Then we get three and out. Then they get the ball. We come back. We put one drive together. And then the next thing you know, we have a punt return for a touchdown. And so a lot of good things happened in the first part of that game. But with a new offensive line, we really didn't get to establish any rhythm. And I'm looking forward to, kind of like you said in the last podcast, we need that 9 or 10 play grinded out drive to kind of get this offense kickstarted to start this game.
Oh, yeah. I think if, you know, and it's a coin toss and who gets the ball first. I think if we get the ball in our first possession, we put together, you know, 8, 9, 10, you know, 12 play drive for a score. I think that, you know, that'll just be unleashing the offense. Now, if we go 3 and out to begin, you know, that has a different route too. But I think this team is ready. And I think our game plan, I think a significant portion of our game plan hinges on our ability to hold the ball. Last year, and I wasn't smart enough to say this in the podcast, but you and I talked about it walking to the stadium last year, and we talk about it a lot in the podcast about us trying to be an even distribution between run and pass. And, you know, I said last year, hey, if we're even in this game, we lose because we need to hold the ball. We need to rest our defense, you know, coming out of the LSU game and the number of snaps that we played. The situation's a little bit different. We're not trying to protect our defense, or we don't have a leg-weary defense at this stage, obviously. But it's almost like basketball. We need to keep the ball away from the opponent because they can be so explosive, and because I think they will frustrate themselves trying to score, you know, 14 points on one play. I think an integral part of our game plan is, or at least should be, to hold the ball.
Oh, sure. And I think that we need to, you know, we were hoping to see a lot of formations, a lot of personnel packages in that first game. We thought we were going to give Texas A&M things to think about. And so hopefully we can get into a rhythm of getting some confidence for AJ to start the game. I'd like to see some slants. I'd like to see some screens. I'd like to see some pitch tosses. I'd like to see some counters. And then I'd like to see, you know, 4 wides, 3 wides, split out your tight ends, you know, mix things up and give these young new linebackers something to think about.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I want to do all of that sort of based off of a strong run, though. I want to establish the run, go to the run early and often, and then we can mix it around. I really liked the timing patterns that we ran against Virginia Tech. The first completion AJ had in that ball game to Cooper was as fine of a pitch and catch as you're ever going to see in football. And so if we run those sideline outs or those timing patterns, I like the opportunities that we'll have there. You know, for all the talk about A&M having some people out, the last couple of weeks. And so I think they're kind of hanging their hat on that, that now that they've got everyone back, you know, they gave up a lot of yards to Rice and a lot of yards to Sam Houston State. They gave up 21 points to Sam Houston State. If we were to do that, there would be a lot of bald Alabama fans because they'd be pulling their hair out for the last 2 weeks, just frustrated that we're giving up that many points to a team like that. And it doesn't seem to faze A&M because, you know, they're more prolific on offense. But giving up 28 points, I don't care if you've got a couple of starters out, you know, and it's almost like, you know, pick a lane, right? We gave up all these points and all of these yards because we don't have our starters back. Now we have our starters back and we're going to be instantly good. Or you're three games into the season and your starting unit has not yet played together. That would make me pretty nervous if I were A&M.
I agree. And I think what you have to break down when you look at this year's team versus last year's team is just the makeup of that defense. And, you know, we saw an Auburn team in 2010 that in large part did what they did because of having a lot of seniors and the veteran leadership that they had. Well, Texas A&M had a ton of that last year. I mean, if you go back and look at their depth chart from last year, they had two of their three starting linebackers were third-year seniors. They had a third-year senior at cornerback, a third-year senior at free safety, a third-year senior at defensive tackle. So they had six guys on their starting defense that were three-year starters. And then you throw in a very good Demontre Moore who went pro after his junior year last year. Mm-hmm. So those are seven big players. And I don't think you can even underestimate the fact that, you know, six of them were three-year starters. And so the experience that they brought to the table primarily at the linebacker position and its safety is huge. And so right now you've got a defense that, yes, they've got back Kirby Ennis. They do not have guys on the defensive end who are proven at this point, and they have very suspect at the two safety positions. And so I hope that, you know, last year's team gave us fits from up front, okay, from up front and in the middle, and that's where they gave us fits early on. And so with these guys having so much youth at linebacker, I hope that we are able to establish the run as you're talking about. But I also hope that we work the tight end and the passes to the running backs across the middle and do some crisscross patterns and really stress that defense inside the hash marks because that is where they're vulnerable. And that's where I think we have to go after it.
Yeah, and I think we'll be able to. And just adding to that, you know, their starting safety, Floyd Raven, is out after suffering a broken collarbone or a bruised collarbone. You know, he's out for Saturday's contest. And so you talk about some of the returning starters, you know, losing a lot from last year, but even the returning starters, even the experience that they do have, you know, they're playing a lot of youth. And again, a lot of the articles that I read, a lot of the commentary, you know, they're talking about, hey, these last 2 weeks we've been forced to play a lot of freshmen. That's why we're giving up all these yards. We're getting all these people back, and we're going to be better in the long run. Well, guess what? I agree with that. But week three of the season is not the long run. And so I want to make sure I say this right. I'm not concerned about their defense as their defense. I'm more concerned about our offensive performance. And so I don't know if our offensive performance was a function of our lack of communication and our lack of experience up front, or how much of that was attributable to Virginia Tech and at least their front.
Two defensive tackles.
And well, they're two big defensive tackles and you know, and certainly their front line. And so I don't know if I want to go in glass half full, glass half empty. I don't know if I want to put on rose colored glasses and say it was all Virginia Tech and that's the best line we'll see, you know, until LSU. I don't know that that's necessarily the right answer. I do think it's a mix. I don't want to diminish Virginia Tech, but I don't want to excuse our offensive line play either. So there's a balance there somewhere in the middle. I do think that our guys will come out and perform. They're going to have a hellacious chip on their shoulder, not only because of their performance 2 weeks ago, but certainly because of their performance or our collective team's performance against A&M last year. I think our line is going to come out with a tremendous chip on their shoulder, and they're going to be ready to steamroll some of these guys. I would not be surprised at all if we come out and have no problem establishing the run early on.
I definitely think we'll be able to establish the run because of what we've talked about. But I think it is so imperative that we control the clock and establish these long drives to put stress on their lack of depth. Because I feel like in the Virginia Tech game, we talked about that the only veteran leadership they had was their two starting defensive tackles. Well, because we didn't establish any rhythm and we had all these three and out drives, they never really had to bring anybody else in the game. And so if you look at the defensive end position for Texas A&M, their two backup defensive ends who are twins, or not twins, but Taylor brothers, they are both running 6'4", 230 pounds. And part of the reason I think they've given up so much against the run in the first two games is they cannot establish the edge because they're just small in stature. And so they've got linebackers playing defensive end. And so we've got to get to those two guys, and we've got to get to their freshmen on their defensive line, on defensive tackle, you know, by having the ball 65 plays. I mean, we come into this thing only averaging 55 plays of offense, and 55 plays is going to get us beat. We've got to have the ball at least 65 to 67 plays to really wear out a inexperienced defense that really doesn't have a lot of depth.
Yeah, I 100% completely agree with that. You know, normally we talk about long drives, sustaining the ball, clock possession, just as you're presenting it, for the sake of wearing down the defense. And I 100% agree with that. That's, you know, that's what you want to be able to do. I think with a team like A&M, with their coach and especially their quarterback, I think it has a multiplier effect in that they just get frustrated sitting over on the sidelines and want to come out and in one or two plays counter a 12-play drive. And they may be able to do that once, maybe twice, but that's not sustainable. That's not something that they can do all day. And so if we continue to have these drives, continue to eat the clock, then I think that we will have some carryover to their style of offense as well. It will frustrate them and potentially, you know, lead them into some poor decisions, which could turn the ball back over. And so there could, and certainly I'd like to see us being able to sustain drives on the ground, having a snowball effect in terms of our performance and our scoring.
Oh, sure. And early on, you know, we've got to be able to call various formations and various plays that gives AJ some confidence early on, whether it's screen passes, whether it is, you know, just running some draws, whether it's just getting it to the tight end on a five yard out route. I think once again, we've got to put pressure on, you know, those linebackers and get in these second and five and second and, you know, six type of situations. You know, when you go back and look at last year's game, which I did to prepare, I just got so frustrated at the beginning because, I mean, early on, we sit there and, you know, throw an interception, which gives them the ball on the 41-yard line. We fumble the ball, which gives them the ball at the 35-yard line. And then, of course, we had the, you know, the lovely interception at the end of the game that decided things.
Yep.
But we had three turnovers that's uncharacteristic of us.
Yes.
And we cannot afford to give them a short field just because of how quick they're able to, you know, to strike.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing we've talked about establishing the run and, you know, gaining a lot of yards there, certainly possessing the ball. And I'm going to throw a name at you, and I promise this is not my accountant, but this isn't the name that makes me feel good that we'll be able to gain these yards. And that's Timothy Flanders, who's the running back for Sam Houston State, who gained 170 yards last week.
Okay. What is his height and weight?
Well, I don't have all his numbers. It just struck me. Timothy Flanders sounds like he ought to be, you know, someone's bookkeeper.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely not. Now, I was just was curious his size and stature, but yeah, didn't they, I believe they gave up something like 100 and something rushing yards just in the third quarter alone.
Yeah, they had a 68-yard run during the game, and they also gave up a 75-yard pass play too. So, you know, they're subject to giving up big plays on the defense. And so I think that's something that works in our favor, right? A lot of yards on the ground and big plays through the air. That kind of sounds like our formula to winning a lot of games last year.
No, absolutely. And you know, something else I want to mention real quick is, you know, while we're sticking on the Alabama offense for a second, is we had success attacking downfield. When we did throw the ball downfield, you know, we had a pass completion to Amari Cooper for 18 yards and another one for 15 yards. And, you know, those are really the only times besides the Christian Jones play that we really attacked down the field. Well, the other thing that I think is crucial for this attack is we have got to get other guys involved in the passing game. 10 completions from AJ is not going to cut it. In my opinion, you're going to have to see him complete 20 passes in this ball game. I'd love to see him complete 20 passes to four different receivers, but you have got to get a Kenny Bell involved early in this game. You have got to get a Norwood involved early in this game, not just because it's third down and 8 yards to go. And you've got to get a DeAndre White involved in this game early on. His first pass play was like at the end of the first quarter last or 2 weeks ago, you know, thrown to him 2 yards behind the line of scrimmage. And so you've got all these weapons. You've got to use them. You have got to use the ability that I've got in O.J. Howard and a White and a Norwood and a Bell and a Christian Jones and an Amari Cooper. And I think you've got to throw all this at them. And I think if you do, there's just no way they can stop it.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. And I want to distribute the ball. 20 completions is a lot, you know, and I hope that we get that. But I hope it comes in the natural flow of the game, not us playing a lot of catch-up ball. Hope it comes in the natural flow of the game, really layered in with a lot of running.
I'm just strong on
we've got to run the ball and out of balance. I mean, we've got to run two runs to every pass. You know, not this 50-50, just try to distribute, or 60-40. I mean, we have to be skewed to the run, and we need to be successful at it.
I'm okay with that, but if you look at the game against Virginia Tech, we had 38 rushes. We had 24 pass attempts. So we were obviously skewed to the run. But, and, you know, TJ Yeldon averaged 4 yards. Tenpenny averaged 4 yards. Those aren't bad numbers, okay? But out of our 10 completions, you had 2 to Christian Jones, 2 to White, 1 to Norwood. Kenny Bell's not even in the picture. Your leading wide receiver can not only have 4 catches in this game and be successful. That's what I'm saying.
That's fair. That's fair.
And the other thing I want to mention real quick too, just before we flip this, is we have got to establish the second back and who that's going to be.
We cannot leave
this discussion with who is going to be the second person, because I felt like TJ Yeldon got tired because we used him too much into the game. We did not see, you know, a D Hart or a Jost. We saw Justin Fowler maybe 1 carry, but for the most part, we used Yeldon, I felt like, too much early in the game, and we didn't see the Derrick Henry or the Fowler or the D Hart enough. If it's going to be Tenpenny, great, but we've got to see that second back in the third series, and we got to see more of them.
Well, and that's fair, and we do need, we do need a consistent, you know, methodical distribution and rotation of the running backs. We didn't see that. And I think some of that, and we'll see, but I think some of the lack of, you know, clarity against Virginia Tech, I think some of that is addressed when Kenyon Drake comes back. And it's been reported that he'll play a role in this game. I think he will be the number two back. I don't know the whole, you know, situation, and, you know, that's a whole nother podcast, but I think he comes back, and I think that provides some of the clarity that he really clearly is and should be the second guy.
Okay.
Well, why don't we, before we flip the field, why don't you give us some of your, you know, one or two, not a whole laundry list, but one or two of the players that you think are key to our offensive performance?
I think the first one is going to be Kenny Bell. because Kenny Bell was not utilized in this game to stretch the field. And that's a strength that he brings to the table. And I think we're going to see him go after the middle of the field against those young safeties. The second one I want to see is O.J. Howard. I want to see O.J. Howard and or Brian Vogler involved in the passing game. So as much as I want to see us establish the run, I think those two guys need to step up for us in the passing game.
All right. Well, you're a spoiler on my two picks then, because I went with Kenyon Drake, and so I very intentionally did not reference specific running backs until you forced me to there at the end, because I wanted to get my first plug of Kenyon in as me envisioning him as a key player. And then I selected O.J. Howard, which, you know, he's a true freshman that we've only thrown to once. And so that's either a really, really good pick or a really, really bad pick. But because of their weakness at the linebacker and safety position, I think there's an opportunity there for Howard. So I'm going Drake and Howard there.
Absolutely. Sounds good. I think we're both going to be right on the tight end position.
Yeah, I think so. Why don't we flip the field to defense? And so, frankly, I think this is the more difficult because it really boils down to, you know, how do we stop Johnny Manziel? And so why don't I hand it off and let you answer that question first?
Well, you know, just like on defense, man, they had a lot of veteran leadership last year. You know, I don't think you can discount the fact that their three starting wide receivers were third-year seniors, in addition to a third-year senior at tailback, in addition to a third-year senior at center. And so you had tight end, your center, three wide receivers, and a tailback, all third-year seniors. And then, oh, by the way, you know, you had the Luke Jokel at left tackle, which, you know, we know how good he was. And so, you know, granted, Manziel came on the scene, but once again, you had six third-year seniors out of 11 starters.
Yeah, third-year starters. Third-year starters is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's tremendous. That's tremendous, in my opinion. And
no question.
And now, what's so amazing about last year too was Manziel's comfort level with one receiver. And so what really frustrated me last year was Ryan Swope.
Yep.
And Ryan Swope had 11 catches for 100 yards.
Yep.
And he was your dink and dunk person, and he dinked and dunked us to death. Well, this year's team, you know, Mike Evans is that guy for them so far. Well, Mike Evans, who wasn't a starter last year, oh, by the way, you know, he was just 6'5" and played a lot last year and finished with 82 catches for 1,000 yards.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, had he not got banged up a little bit in the season, he probably would have had more than 5 touchdowns. Well, sure. He's already got like 14 catches on the year 2 weeks into the season. So I think it starts with Mike Evans because mm-hmm. their other wide receivers do not scare me at all. And so I think that is important. And then I think just the, you know, keeping Manziel in the pocket. When you go back and look at last year's game, he had 18 rushes for 100 yards. Okay. Their starting tailback, he only averaged 3 yards a carry.
Yep.
And Manziel had 2 runs. He had one of 29 yards and one of 32 yards in that first quarter. And those 2 runs, when we didn't know what he was bringing to the table, was the backbreaker. And once we figured out how fast he was, he had 16 other carries for, you know, a paltry 40 yards. So I think, you know, establishing the edge in the pocket and really, you know, bracketing Mike Evans is the key here.
Yeah, I think, you know, Mike Evans is clearly their lead receiver. You mentioned, you know, he's 6'4", 6'5", you know, big, tall receiver. You know, they have a pretty good stable. Now, he, you know, like I said, he's sort of the receiver at the top of the list. You know, but I think their top 3 receivers are all, you know, 6'4 or better, 6'3 or better. And so they're all tall. They all provide very, you know, very good, very big targets. And so that's, you know, that's something that we'll need to watch out for. You know, Fulton back in coverage, you know, I think that he's going to be okay. I still want to see him really excel. He was coming on late in the season last year. I want to see that. You know, he didn't go through spring drills, and maybe I'm still kind of hung up and nervous on that. But I'd really like to see, you know, him step up. I feel very confident in Blue. I think that he's gonna do well. And I look forward to Geno coming back. You know, this is a game, and we've talked about this, and listeners, you know, probably sick of hearing me say this, but this is sort of the Geno game for me. You know, because he started playing full time after this game, and we really wish that we had started that midseason so we would have had him for this game last year, because I think it would have made a big difference. So having him in this game, I think is critical. And then it's just, how do we align ourselves? And so I think there's two things, and I think you touched upon them, you know, maybe to kind of put my spin on it. But, you know, part of it reminds me of, and I hate to harken back to this game, because it's still, and I laugh, it's still really one of the most painful experiences I've ever had as an Alabama fan. But that's the 2010 Auburn game. And the whole game plan there was keep Cam in the pocket. We had to rotate guys in that were just incapable of maintaining, you know, Alex Watkins and,
yes,
you know, whoever else the folks, yes, were that I've, you know, don't remember anymore, that we could not maintain the pocket. And I think we have the players today and the depth of personnel that we can maintain the edge on the pockets. And so if you take a Stinson and a Hubbard and, you know, I think they can, I don't know, one's a defensive end and one's a lineman, but when we go to a four-man front, which we typically do, a lot of times it's Hubbard walking down as a defensive end position. So, you know, I'm not, you know, just making this stuff up. I think they can play a critical role in setting the edge. And I especially like Hubbard coming to set that edge, because he's 6'7" and got that wingspan. So if, yes, he comes in and sets that edge, he can still get up and, you know, create some havoc in some passing lanes. And so I like their ability to do that. Maybe some delayed blitzing up the middle once we've got a nice pocket set and contained. Then it becomes, how do we defend the back end? And do we do, and clearly nickel, right? Clearly we're going to play nickel. You know, how much dime do we play? I think there's an opportunity to play a lot of dime. And I read a fantastic article by Chris Brown from Smart Football. And, you know, it's the kind of thing I wish that I was smart enough, and I wish I knew football well enough to have written the article. And I'm going to post a link, you know, to it in our show notes. But he talked about, you know, and he broke down some plays from our A&M game last year, and he broke down some, you know, some footage and some schemes that Belichick and Saban put together back, you know, as far back as when, you know, they were with the Browns. And they talked about the Browns, you know, one year inability to beat the Steelers, because the Steelers could run the ball, but then they would go and run three and four wide receivers and just run go routes. And they put the bind on the Cleveland secondary because their secondary wasn't good enough to cover all of those guys. And so they either had to go man on man and get beat. They had to play zone and then get beat with crossing patterns, you know, or, you know, if they completely wholesaled and played a dime, then Pittsburgh just crushed them with a run. So it almost sets up as a dilemma, you know, not too dissimilar to what we've got here. And so the conversation, you know, it sort of evolved into the discussion of, well, do you play too deep safety, which we do a lot of, so you have the extra protection over top, or because of the threat of the run that Manziel brings to the equation, do you play a one deep safety so you can get an extra man in the box, and then you just run the risk with you know, the extra defender? And so I'm very curious how we'll do that. And this is where I especially wish that I could be at the game so that I could, you know, watch. You know, on TV, it's so hard just to tell where the defenders are lining up, especially the back end of the defense. But that's something that I look forward to seeing. How do we defend them, you know, in the back end? We know it's going to be nickel, but how do we align the nickel? That's especially what I'd like to see.
Well, and you know, I think more times than not, we see that, you know, man free look, or that cover one, as they call it, where you've just got that one safety dropping back. And I think that's what Alabama does predominantly with that nickel look. And so I think you're going to see Ha-Ha back as center field. Mm-hmm. I think you're going to see Vinny down in the box, because I think that gives them the flexibility, okay, against, mm-hmm, the run versus the pass. But I think that the biggest thing last year was we underestimated his speed. I remember,
yes,
when he scrambled up the middle in that first quarter for 32 yards, you know, C.J. Mosley thought he had the angle, and he didn't. And then remember the touchdown pass, you know, that where he sat there and should have been sacked, right? Mm-hmm. And he extended the play, and he rolled out, and he found the open man because he bought time and he bought time and he bought time. And that, to me, I think, is the biggest Achilles heel for, I guess, most defenses, but for this particular defense. If we allow him to extend the play with his feet, he's going to make plays.
Yes. Yes.
And so my concern for a Fulton is if the play gets extended. My concern for a Vinny is if the play gets extended.
Yeah. And that's almost where it goes back to that game against Cam is now, you know, at the time, I think we probably feel like, you know, as we sit here today, I think we probably feel like Manziel's a better passer than we thought Cam was at that time. Or at least, yes. You know, at least I'll admit to that.
He is currently completing 70% of his passes.
Yeah. And now look, I watched some of the highlights against, unfortunately, I couldn't, you know, it was on pay-per-view and I wasn't going to pay to watch it, but I watched some of the highlights against Sam Houston State and there were receivers just wide open. And you think, okay, well, you know, that shouldn't happen. But he was throwing the ball on money at times too. And those were the highlights that really made me nervous. So he's improved as a passer over last year and certainly a better passer than what we thought Cam was, you know, back in 2010. And the whole approach to that was, you know, set the edge and force Cam to pass the ball. Well, we can force Johnny to pass the ball. I think that he can have some success, but if we run a delayed blitz, you know, we maintain coverage, then I think we increase our chances. Because like you said, it's the extending the play. It's allowing that second and then that third move that a receiver can make to shake loose when he's scrambled outside of the pocket. That's what we need to avoid.
Oh, absolutely. And that's what's so key with that security blanket. And so that's why I was mentioning that, you know, I'm not impressed with these other wide receivers. I'm only impressed with Mike Evans. And I hope we show some extra attention toward him because if we can cut off that safety valve, you know, that can be huge. But I will tell you, in researching this team, I'm very impressed with their offensive line. Obviously last year, you know, they had a huge loss whenever they lost Luke, but they have just sat there and not missed a beat. You know, Jake Matthews has just moved over to the left tackle position, and you know he's projected to be a top first round draft pick.
Yep.
But then you sit there and you look at some of the other things they've done. They really have sat there and moved their other next best player, who was really a tackle. He's moved to right tackle. Cedric, I'm not going to butcher his last name, but he has moved to that right tackle spot. And then their new center. Well, he just happens to be the son of a Hall of Famer. He replaces a 4-year starter at center, but still he's got some nice pedigree there. And then they've got two offensive guards who came in at 340, which are now down to 320. So you got two very athletic tackles. You got two beasts at guard. So my point is that, you know, thank goodness they're starting running back Molina is only 5'9", 195 pounds. Thank goodness he's not this bowling ball like Maurice Jones-Drew.
Right.
Because he didn't do crap against us last year. And I'm just saying that they have a very good offensive line. And they're running at a very hectic pace. I mean, they ran 87 plays in that game last weekend in 31 minutes of time of possession.
Yeah.
That's insane. They have already run 153 plays from scrimmage to our 65 for the. Now, granted, we've only had one game, but still, they've run out. They're averaging close to 80 plays a game from scrimmage.
Right.
And so I also think that, you know, we cannot let them have more than 65 plays from scrimmage. Because if they sit there and have a 75 play type of game, you know, that's going to expose any depth of any defense.
Yeah, I agree. And so that's where I think it goes back to the offense and the significance of us being able to hold the ball. I mean, you know, certainly in defense, we want to get three and outs, and I agree with that, right? I think there's two avenues by which we try to limit their play count. One is just keeping the ball away from them, and then the other, obviously, is then trying to take it away from them when we're on defense. If we can have a couple 12-play drives for touchdowns and a couple three and outs, I mean, you know, that may be a pipe dream, but I think if we did, you know, if that's the way the first quarter looks, we've put up, you know, a 10-play drive for a touchdown, a 10-play drive for a field goal, and then they've got, you know, it's 10 to nothing. They've had two, three and outs. I think, you know, it's 10 to nothing, but it's more than that.
Oh, sure. And well, they're averaging 59 points a game, right? Which is just ungodly. And so to your point, right? It's like, you know, keep, you know, just like the announcers are going to say on Saturday, right? Keeping the ball away from the Texas A&M offense. I think keeping the ball away from them is so much more important than scoring points in this ball game.
Yes.
Because we are going to see an offense from them that we will not see the rest of the year.
Not as proficient. Now we will see, you know, seven teams this season that will run some sort of, you know, hurry up. But I don't think any of the teams will be able to run it with the proficiency of the returning Heisman Trophy winner. So I think that, you know, if we have prepared for this style of offense and we have a game plan to stop it, if that game plan works on Saturday, that bodes really well for the rest of the season.
Oh, sure. And I also think that it's also important with this team to try to, you know, the whole bend but not break philosophy, you know, not to jump to special teams for a moment, but when we get there, you know, they've got a kicker who really doesn't have a lot of success. He's a very inconsistent kicker. I think last year he was 13 of 22 in field goals. He's got a very strong leg, but he's not consistent. And so, you know, I think that they are more apt to take more chances and to go for it on fourth down more and go for, you know, where normal teams are just going to try to put points on the board, they're going to try to press for keeping that ball because they don't have a lot of confidence in their kicker.
Well, are you suggesting that we do?
I just think that we have, I guess at this point in the season, only one game in, right? We haven't seen what the, you know, what the distribution of duties is going to be between the kickers at this point. Is it going to be one kicker versus two kickers? But, you know, currently for them, you know, they have shown an ability to take more chances with the ball than a typical team would just because of the confidence they have in the kicker. And right. So I think that from a Cade Foster, I would hope, you know, I don't know what his numbers were last year currently, but I would hope that we have more confidence in him than Texas A&M is conveying in their special teams play.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I want to do two things, but first, why don't we talk about defense and key players? Who are your key players on defense?
You know, for me, I think the key players has got to be John Fulton, and I think it has to be Landon Collins.
Okay.
I think John Fulton is obvious. We saw on that one go route against Virginia Tech, if the ball would have been placed properly, it would have been a touchdown. And so I'm still concerned about over the top. And, you know, with Landon Collins, I think we're going to be playing a decent amount of dime. And I think Landon's going to be in there when we are in the dime. I'm not so certain Geno's going to be in there as much as Landon actually in this game. And so I want to see more flashes from Landon, and I want to see what he gives us on the back end of the defense.
Okay. I have is my key players Stinson, just because I want to give a, you know, it's easier to kind of pick Hubbard, but I want to go Stinson because he's the guy that doesn't get a lot of the credit on our defensive front, and I think he's going to play a critical role in helping to set the edge, and so I want to call him out. And I think Geno, you and I think maybe differ here. I think we see, you know, and I kind of gave my my content away earlier. In some respects, I see this as the Geno game. And so I think he's going to, for as well as he played last year and as much as he came on, I'm sure there's some times, over the summer that he wished, man, I wish I could have gotten some play in that game. So I think he's going to really be ready to not only prove himself, how he wished he could have contributed last year, but also to recompense for having missed the Vatek game. So I think he comes out and has a big game.
Okay.
Hey, one thought I want to put out there. Now you can tell me if I'm just gonna, if this is kind of pie in the sky and I'm overgrandizing this, but here's my thought. All eyes in the football world are on this game Saturday afternoon. And it's not, just because, I'm an Alabama fan, which, I think that's reason enough. But the spread offense, this hurry up, no huddle offense, this running quarterback, this mobile quarterback, this style of offense, whatever name we put on it today, has made itself, has carried itself to the NFL. Chip Kelly and the Phillies had the Philadelphia Eagles had some success with it last night. Dom Capers went to, defensive coordinator. Kaepernick has had the success that he's had in San Francisco. Don Capers, NFL defense coordinator, actually went to College Station this summer to learn the offense so he could figure out in the NFL how to stop it. Early returns in the NFL seem to be that they haven't figured it out yet. With some of the success, A&M comes out this year, just apparently blowing the doors off of these teams. I think everyone is asking the question: is this a phase? Is this a fad? Or is this the future of football? And I don't think we know yet. And I think there's a lot of people looking at, has Nick Saban figured this thing out? And I don't say, and it's easy to say, bully for you and your coach and you're just being a blowhard. But I think there's really something to that. He is, he's considered one of the best coaches out there and certainly a defensive mind. And you know that he has put in the hours over the summer trying to figure this darn thing out. And so I do think, you tell me what you think, but I think all eyes in the football world are on this game on Saturday.
Oh, I think so too. And you give me a good segue to mention this that I failed to mention earlier that, we probably should have mentioned at the beginning of the podcast. And that is just Nick Saban's record in rematches, since coming to the SEC.
Sure.
I mean, I was surprised that it was as high as it was, that he has a record of 15-2 since coming to LSU in 2000. And so we've heard rumors that they've been playing tapes of the Texas A&M game in the weight room all year. But yet when he comes out there on his press conference, he's like, yeah, it's just another game and all the players are saying the right things and all this kind of crap. Right. But you and I both know that he's been game planning this for a while. And I do agree with you that there are coaches out there who respect him to say, damn, Nick, figure it out, man. Please figure it out for us.
Right.
So that we can just come back in the offseason and find out what you did.
Yeah. Figure something out so we can, we can maybe try to borrow from it.
And I think, David, he figured that out in the second quarter of last year's game. The other thing that frustrates me about analysts and sportscasters and all this media coverage, right? All this love fest for Johnny Manziel. Well, guess what? They got three touchdowns in the first quarter of that football game. And they really, for the most part, didn't do much of anything for the rest of the football game.
Yeah.
When you go back and you really analyze the stats and you look at how many three and outs we had and how much pressure we got on Manziel in the second, third, and fourth quarter, I kind of think it only took Nick Saban one quarter last year to figure it out. So I actually would probably put it out there that I think he figured it out a year ago at the beginning of the second quarter, but it was too freaking late at that point because he was down 20-0.
Well, that'd be interesting then because he's enjoyed a nice relaxing summer if he figured it out you know, in November.
What I'm saying there is enough people are not giving credit to how we shut down the prolific offense that we did last year. That's all I'm saying.
No, that's
fair.
And
is give credit to what we did last year with the personnel that we had last year.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. I think, you know, what do they say? You know, history is written by the winners, right? And so, you know, they won the game. And so a lot of what you're saying, a lot of that detail kind of gets lost in
of course it does. It's not sexy.
Right. So, but, you know, but that's okay. You know, special teams, you have anything, you know, I was kind of kidding about the kickers a minute ago. Anything, you know, material you want to add to the discussion relative to special teams?
Well, just like I mentioned, I mean, you know, their kicker has a strong leg, supposed to be one of the strongest legs in the country. Last week, he had 10 opportunities to kick the damn ball off, and he kicked 9 of them in the end zone. And so they're predicated on pinning their opponents deep. And so, you know, they're used to having the opposing offenses starting off at the 20-yard line. He did make 4 field goals last year over 50 yards, which tied a record for all time at Texas A&M. But he did miss, you know, 9 out of his 20 attempts. Then when you look at the punter, I will mention for the punting game, he's only punted once so far this year because his offense has done so well. He has been in the program for 3 years, but yet he was not able to beat out the other guy for the punting job 2 years in a row. So this year he gets the starting punting job just from default, and he's extremely inconsistent. He actually, you know, one punt will be 68 yards and the next punt will be 20 yards. And so I'd love if we can get a couple 3-and-outs, get this guy in here to punt who hasn't punted really this year, right? Mm-hmm. Get a couple of these shank kind of punts, get us some good short fields, and just put them on their heels from the get-go.
Well, if you have, and I don't know that it would impact our skill personnel in the same way that it will impact their skill people personnel, but this is the biggest game, you know, probably in the history of, you know, Kyle Field. This may be the biggest game that they've ever, you know, had on campus. Not that ESPN is the metric of that, but they've had 3, you know, this will only be their 3rd game day. And so it is a metric. It's not the metric. But, you know, you look at tickets going for $400, $500, $600. They've got all sort of policies and they're cracking down on their own students who are selling tickets, you know. All of the hoopla around this game, I think it's pretty clear, pretty safe to say that, you know, this is the biggest game that they've had on their campus. And so if I'm a punter, for example, that doesn't punt very often and I'm given to wide ranges of outcome, then I, you know, perhaps my emotion could be wrapped up in my performance. And so, you know, those types of things. Whereas I think we do pretty well on the road. I think Alabama as a whole under Saban does pretty well on the road, especially in hostile environments, and typically we've quieted down teams pretty well. You know, hey, we've played at LSU a few times, and that's I don't think you get any more hostile environment than that. And so other than maybe the heat being a factor, I don't see the crowd necessarily being a factor for us. I think we'll go out there and do what we do, but I think maybe it could cause some of their players to clench a little bit.
No, that's fair. Hey, listen, one thing that I forgot to mention on defense that I want to go back to for a second is in light of the injury to Dalvin Tomlinson, who I was,
yes,
you know, pretty high on coming into the season.
No, I'm glad you referenced him.
Who do you think is going to be the guy? You know, they've been seeing Jonathan Allen has been working behind Pagan in practice, and D-Liner has been behind Jonathan Allen. But who do you think steps in depth-wise with the loss of Tomlinson?
Well, I think a little bit of it may be Xavier Dixon getting some run, you know, at defensive end, and we've kind of
as opposed to linebacker.
Yeah, and so we've talked about that. I think you're kind of the lead on that idea, and so I think we see some of him there, and then I think Jonathan Allen would be the next guy.
Okay. I just was curious because I think that's a loss that this team can endure, but I think that's still a I was very excited about what I saw. He had four solo tackles in his first game.
Yeah,
at Alabama, and so yeah, I hated to see him.
I am disappointed for him. you know, because I think what he was going to bring to this year's defense was exactly what we needed. And so, you know, from a fan, from a selfish standpoint, you know, I miss that he's not going to be there. For his sake, obviously, he was going to contribute. So I miss that he's not going to be there. And then he missed last season because of a knee injury, too.
Yes.
And so this, you know, and he'll get a red shirt and we'll kind of figure out the math on how many seasons he can play. But there is a reality that says his first 2 years of college, you know, he missed play and would have played. Saban said he would have played last year. He missed playing because of knee injuries. And so, you know, we hope the best for the kid. Certainly, we hope that he's full recovery back next year. You know, no traces of this. But it starts to kind of, you know, plant data points of, you know, the guy just never could be healthy and never could play. And I don't want to say that that's who he is, but,
right,
you know, I'm two for two seasons in knee injuries.
Oh, sure. And Coach Saban said he would have gotten playing time as a true freshman.
Sure.
If he wouldn't have gotten hurt last year.
Yeah, absolutely. So, well, let's kind of bring this to a close. I think this is a good discussion. Certainly a game that we're looking forward to. I mean, always look forward to Alabama games. There's a little extra buzz around this one. And so this feels this feels really, really good. Looking forward to the game. I'm probably more nervous about this game than I have been a game in a while. But, you know, so, you know, there it is. What are you looking score-wise? What are you looking outcome-wise?
You know, as I got ready for this podcast, man, I got a little bit more nervous just as I saw, you know, just all the good things I was reading about their offensive line to go with the play of Johnny Manziel. You know, I think Texas A&M is going to score as many points as they did last year. But I think we are going to score more points than we did last year. I am actually I would not have thought I would have said this a week ago, but I actually see a little bit of a shootout.
Wow.
I actually see us needing to put up in the high 30s to win this game. I could see a final score of like 38-31.
Wow. You'll lose your bet to Steve if that happens.
Yes, indeed.
Well, you know, when I put together the guide, I don't know, I must have been high on the Alabama Kool-Aid because I put a score out there that I hope that we hit, but I'm not going to repeat it on the air. I'm going to predict, I'm going to go 31-24. I think we do trade blows with them. I think at some point we draw some separation. Again, it's time of possession based. I think we do draw some separation. They get a late touchdown to make it closer, you know, to make it that 7-point game there at the end. But, you know, I think we have a sort of a tipping point in the middle of the game where our control of the ball, control of the clock, you know, proves itself and we pull ahead. And then from there, we kind of cruise on to victory.
Yeah, I like your score better than mine.
Yes. All right. Well, hey, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. We thank you for tuning in and listening. If there's one thing you want to do to support the show, we would greatly appreciate it if you'd go to the site and actually go to iTunes, subscribe to us on iTunes, and leave a comment, leave your review on iTunes. That's probably the single greatest thing that can help us help promote the show in the rankings in iTunes and kind of help us grow the platform that we have here. But we appreciate you listening. And with that, roll tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a roll tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, T-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.